Reel 3 of 3 Reels, interviewing Mrs. Esther Hall in Central Alaska in August of 1973. Mrs. Hall talks about her life and the life and gives some data on her late husband, John B. Dixie Hall. What do I do with my pen? I remember your husband, John B. Dixie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was the city clerk in Fairbanks.
No, he's clerk of the court.
Clerk of the court.
Yeah.
That's right. And he wasn't he clerk of the, he was in the federal
Yes, in the system. Federal court system. Mm-hmm.
Well, then you came back to Fairbanks in 1933, mm-hmm. and was it then that he went into that?
No, he came up. Tony Diamond had been down. He was the delegate at a time to Congress. And he came down and...
To Bethel?
Yeah, and he knew that... well, I had, I guess, expressed the thought that I thought we should, you know, go back again to Fairbanks or somewhere else beside Bethel. So he... came up here, and then he wired Dixie and said there was an opening in the marshal's office. Joe McDonald had gone in then as a marshal, mm-hmm. and it was during the Roosevelt administration. And so Dix was offered a job in the marshal's office. So he said, well, he guessed that maybe that would be the best thing to do. So he came, that's how we happened to come up here.
Mm-hmm. And this trip you described, where you went up to the Kuskokwim and Portage Dover.
Yes, that was when we came over.
And he had flown over.
And he flew over, mm-hmm. yes. And so, and then he did that until he was chief clerk in the marshal's office. He did that until Mr. Nordell was killed in an airplane crash. And Catherine, you know, afterward worked for Dix. Catherine Nordell.
Catherine Nordell.
Yes, mm-hmm. and so then he took his job as clerk of the court, and Harry Pratt was the judge.
So then he, but at first he was chief clerk in the marshal's
office. Yes, in
office.
The marshal's office. Uh-huh.
And then he became the clerk of the court.
Clerk of the court, the fourth division. And that year, the time it was a huge division, and they the clerk of the court not only did the court business, which was very little court business in those years, but also issued all the liquor license and all the licenses for everything.
That's right, the marriage licenses.
Yeah, everything. And then he also, I remember for a long while, dispensed the Pioneer Fund, you know, the people here, the elderly people who got in there. Because we had this elderly lady, and she was very proud, and she had to accept this. So she didn't like to come and get it, so Dixie would take it to her rather than, you know, embarrass her by having...
What was it?
It was a territorial.
When
they got to a pension every month, you see.
I see.
And so he dispensed with it. He did that for a number of years, mm-hmm. and then he had something to do with the land off. So it had many, you know, many little sidelines in those years. And then later on, of course, that was all changed. You know, when the state court came in, then they.
But Ledessa Nordell was she was in the. Federal building too, and her.
She was a commissioner, wasn't she?
She was a commissioner.
Yes,
yeah.
That's what I thought.
And that's I think she handled the marriage license.
Yes, she did, and could perform marriages and one thing another.
Yeah.
Yes, uh-huh, she
and
did.
And the recording of deeds. And
yes,
mining.
That's
things.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so.
But when Dixie was the clerk of the court, let's go back when he was the chief clerk in the marshal's office. The marshal was who?
Joe McDonald.
Joe McDonald.
Uh-huh. And that was his reward for being a good... And he had mined out at Esther for years. Joe mm-hmm. McDonald was a mining man out there. And that was his reward for being a good Democrat, I guess.
Oh, it was a political appointment.
Yes,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And then the judge, while Dixie was clerk of the court... he was clerk of the court for many years.
Yes, he was. It was Judge Pratt and then Judge Forbes.
That's right, Judge Forbes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's Judge Harry, was it Harry Pratt?
Harry Pratt.
Mm-hmm. And then Vernon Forbes. Vernon Forbes is still going strong in Fairbanks.
And yes, he is.
Everyone still calls him Judge, though he's in the
Well, he I suppose
business.
He always will carry that title. I think mm-hmm. that's what goes along with it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So Dixie then retired. Did he retire?
Yes, he retired. When the state took over, he decided that he, you know, would retire. And then that he worked a little longer because they came from the general office at Washington and asked him if he would stay on until that was completed, you see. Mm-hmm. But he felt like there were so many changes in the method and everything, you know, they did so many things out of Juneau rather than in his office that he said that he felt that he had worked too long as it was, and he just, you know, felt the change was too great.
Yeah, so there were quite a few radical changes.
He didn't approve of all of them, and he said, "What was the use?" You know, he was so he retired then. And
I remember that first year of statehood, the judicial system was a little slow in getting started.
Uh-huh.
I can remember a couple of attorney friends of ours who talked about, well, some of them really, they had no income for a long time.
Is that right?
Because they couldn't go to court.
No.
The transition from territorial to state court system was slow and cumbersome, and at times it was about a year there was.
Yes.
Well, you know, when you go from a territorial status where you have to report to Washington statehood operation, it's quite a transition.
It is quite a transition. And I think Dix just felt that he'd been there long enough, you know, and he'd worked through not only the Democrat but the Republican regime, and he felt that was... And he always fully expected, you see, when Forbes went in, he didn't even expect to be kept on because, of course...
Judge Forbes was Republican.
Yes, Republican, and Dixie has always made it known that he was a Democrat, you see. Mm-hmm. And there was some opposition, Mike, to some of the
As a matter of fact, I just not too long ago, someone was talking politically, you know, just in a little side conversation, mm-hmm. that Judge Forbes wasn't, at the time, some of the Republicans... were a little provoked at Judge Forbes because he kept a couple of Democrats on.
Well, Dix would be one of them, yes. Uh-huh. And Dix offered to resign. He told him, he said, "Judge Forbes, if it's embarrassing to you or put you on the spot, I will be glad to resign." And Judge Forbes said, "I don't know anything about conducting the court or anything up here." He said, I need somebody.
He didn't have any judicial background. He'd been
no,
an attorney.
No, he didn't.
He told me that
it.
Just recently.
Yeah.
That he had been practicing, I think, with his father.
Uh-huh. And I think the attorneys had a hard time because it seemed very difficult for him to make a decision on a case. And that was when he received criticism, too. But then, you know, if he weren't experienced, why, I suppose it was quite a step for him to take over the judgeship.
Super cautious, probably.
That's right, yes.
In his judgments.
Uh-huh.
Well, in Fairbanks, where did you live?
Well, for 21 years, we lived in a log cabin up on the corner of 10th and Cushman, directly catty-corner from the very lovely log cabin that Claire Fayess is in now. Mm-hmm. We were there when that was built, the Walkowitz is built there, and we lived in this log cabin, and I loved it. It was a very old log cabin, but it had been nicely kept up, and we kept it up, and enjoyed living there until
10th and Cushman.
10th and Cushman, and that's where the portable school buildings are. Our property was where the portable school building, that became part of the school grounds.
So did you remain in that house until you moved outside? Or?
Then, you see, we sold it. And then we moved over on Cedar. Our son was buying a big piece of property over there. And he got pretty well involved financially. So Dad and I said, "Well, we'll come over and we'll help you for a year." And we lived there several years then after that. And then we went
outside.
That
was on Slater Street?
Yeah, I'll say that. It was right next to Dan Lehman's property. It was that big piece of property. I see they're building apartments or something on it now. And so we went over there and lived there, and I think people were quite, you know. I just had one friend said, "Well, isn't this quite a letdown?" But as I told her, I'm an Alaskan. I can live anywhere. I can pitch a tent and make a little home out of it. So I had. Because, you know, when you've been in this country as long as I have, you were glad to have a place that was warm and comfortable. Yeah. It didn't have to be anything very elegant.
Yeah.
Not that I wouldn't, I expect like everybody else, have enjoyed a brand new house, but I never experienced that. And it was all right. I was happy as it was. I was happy over in this little funny cabin over here at the Springs. So.
I can imagine that,
you know,
living
at
the Springs is really
when you're in Alaska. And, you know, after all, growing up as I did and when the country was that it was, why? your sense of values. I realize my sense of values is very different, particularly since I've moved to California, where you're so judged by, you know, the house you live in and the kind of car you drive.
I'm kind of proud of my daughter this summer. She's 16 and a half, and she applied for jobs all over town. And
bless her heart.
We live up in, well,
I know you have a very lovely home. You do, I know, Mac. I've heard them say.
We have a nice home, but my son, we could, you know, put some pressure on some of our friends probably and get him a nice job someplace. Yeah. But we let him find his own jobs.
That's good.
You know, we kind of guide him. We've tried to guide him. Mm-hmm. And he's done very well just finding his own odd jobs. This summer he's just been doing odd jobs. And our daughter is doing housework for the summer.
Well, bless her heart.
And I was just telling my husband, I know one of our neighbors that she would never think of allowing her daughter to do housework. But I think it teaches them.
So do I.
She has a goal. She wants to buy a $5,000 sports car.
Yeah, it sounds like my grandchildren
and next year
out there.
She'll probably change her mind. And
that's right.
She wants to borrow my car to go someplace. She'll even hit me up for gas money sometimes. I kind of chuckle about it privately.
I think you, Mr. Dalton, must have been very fine parents to produce children like that, because you know, after all,
they don't think so. But
I know they
they're
don't.
Still in the
but they'll appreciate
stage.
It someday. Mm-hmm. That's what I think. You know, that's what my family out there. They those children. Of course, a family of seven, and they have learned to share. They know, and they've always known they couldn't have just all the things they want. But I think it really is a wonderful thing for them to grow up, mm-hmm. knowing the, you know, a good sense of values. Because,
it was kind of a blessing in disguise when our boy wanted to buy a car, and we really didn't want him to, and some of his friends' parents bought their 16, 17-year-old's car. And he wanted it badly enough that he had enough money to buy it, but not quite pay for it. And then he discovered that there were things like insurance, gas and oil, and tire repair. And so he had to get a job after school in the grocery store, which is a blessing in disguise.
Yes, it
because
is.
It kept him busy 4 nights a week.
You bet.
Then he skied on Saturday or Sunday.
Wonderful.
He had to work Saturday or Sunday. And so it doesn't hurt him to learn.
Not one bit.
But I'm getting off the subject of Dixie Hall.
Well, that's all right. It's interesting anyway.
You lived in Slaterville then for?
About 5 years, I guess we were there.
And then you moved outside?
And then we went outside, and we were going to stay, but when springtime came, we couldn't stay.
Yeah.
So we came back. And then it was that fall that we came over here to the Springs and spent 5 years over there.
So that must have been, 59 or 60?
In 60, I think Dix retired.
And then you came back, and then you lived here at the
Springs. We
for
did.
Five years.
5 years.
Yeah. Yes, and you just rented the cabin year round?
Yes, We had it year round.
And then you stayed here all winter, or did you travel into Fairbanks?
No. Oh, well, no. We'd go into town, you know, regularly, fly in. But we were always glad to get back out again, because it was beautiful. It's beautiful over here in the wintertime, too, Mike.
I bet it is.
And up there at the Springs with all the steam and the frost, you know, just beautiful.
I enjoyed that conversation, or just our little hen party, if you want to call it that. But I enjoyed that conversation with Mrs. Leach last night when you and Ruth Olson and Charlotte Ames were recalling the days when they had the vegetables.
Oh, it was beautiful.
It seemed to it pleased Mrs. Leach so much.
It does. She is pleased about it.
But when people reflect on those days, when you know, they were valuable,
absolutely
valuable days to her.
And it was. It was a wonderful place to come to. And the gardens were just beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know, we all felt sad about John. Of course, John wanted to make his off the liquor. Now there was no question about that. Mm-hmm. You see. And
but it's good to come around that corner and look down and see the garden there.
I know it. That's what I said yesterday. It was so good to see that garden. And you can't help but admire those girls who do the work and who work at it.
Mm-hmm. I think in another couple of years, the current owners will have it
Well, I was talking to Pete Hardenbrook, and he said, well, they figure it'll take 5 years to really get things done that they want to do.
Yeah, I think so. They've made a lot of improvements.
They have. And there's so many, as Henry said the other day, he said, the thing is, they've already done a lot, but it isn't the thing that you see, you know.
Yeah.
There was a lot of pipe to replace, a lot of everything, you know, to do.
Well, I'm glad I came over, because I'm going to come back.
I know.
I came over last weekend. It was the first time in 23 years that I'd been in the, really? At the Springs.
Really? Really?
I'd been in Central, but now, I'd just come here.
Yes. Well, I declare. So
3 days later, I turned around and came back.
Bless your heart. Well, I of course, was a little surprised, and I thought of that hill that they took down. I love that hill, and in the autumn leaves on that hill, and we lived right there where we looked right out our window and we'd sit at our table. It was beautiful, you know. But then, of course, I guess they needed that to do, too.
They'll probably dress that up.
Oh, I imagine they'll landscape that whole thing, yes.
Mm-hmm. So,
it takes a lot of money, and I presume these are younger men who have many years to work at it, you know, mm-hmm. and that's what it needed. Of course, John had reached the age where I think he felt that he, mm-hmm. and so he seemed to be very glad that he sold it. At least they were up the once this winter, and he said that he was glad that he no longer had to worry about mm-hmm. that.
Does he live outside now?
Yes, he lives. Evelyn came in as a teacher, and she had been married before. She was a widow, and her husband and she had an almond ranch. So they live on the almond ranch.
See. Mm-hmm.
And John seems very interested in that, so it gives him a big interest, and I don't think he indulges quite as much as he used to. I think he's, you know, sort of straightened up, so mm-hmm. which makes Evelyn very happy.
Good.
But I remember, you know, his first wife, when they were married, she was a very nice person to his children's mm-hmm. mother. But
Well, you lived there 5 years, and then when was it that Dixie died?
He died in 67. He's been dead 6 years now. Mm-hmm. We went out for the winter. We had a California grandchild, so we went out to see her. And we were getting ready to come home, and he had this heart attack. And Mike, I couldn't get a doctor. In fact, Adele was telling me that Henry became very ill this year out there. And she had the same experience, except her daughter was out there, and she had a doctor. So she finally persuaded him to go see her father. But it was a terrible experience because, mm-hmm. You know, when you're just so helpless, you don't know. And there was a doctor within a block from our apartment. He wasn't interested in anybody over 65 years old.
Oh.
You know, it just seems heartless to you. Mm-hmm. Just and at the time, it's such a blow to you, you know, and you're just so lost. My family hadn't been in Sacramento very long. They didn't have a doctor. And of course, we didn't know anybody out there.
So he died in Sacramento.
And he died in Sacramento. Uh-huh.
Well, he died in 1967.
Yes.
When was he born?
He was born, let's see, and I have to stop and think about that. He was born November the 4th, 1891. He was 8 years older than I.
And he was born the name Dixie. He
was born John B. Hall, of course, and his family always called him. His middle name is Barbie, and he was called that at home because his sisters always called him Barbie. But he was born, he always said, in Saline County, but he always talked about Marshall, and then he lived in, you know, then he went to high school in Kansas City.
This is in Missouri.
In Missouri, mm-hmm. yes. And also, he lived in Columbia, Missouri. He had a sister whose husband was the dean of journalism there, and he at the university, and he lived there with them for a number of years.
What prompted his coming to Alaska?
Well, when he was 21 and came into whatever legacy was left him, he had been left an orphan when he was real little. He bought a ranch in Colorado with a cousin. And he enjoyed life very much in Colorado. He loved Colorado. But they had milk cows, and the cousin wanted to run milk cows, and Dixie wanted to be free to play baseball around. So they decided that the cousin bought him out. And there was another rancher who had hailed out time after time, and he was discouraged, so he was ready to quit ranching. So he and Dixie tossed a coin whether they would come to Alaska or go to South America. And they had heard that the Homer country was cattle country, so that's really what they were headed for.
Is that right?
And they met some man on the boat coming up who told them these glowing stories about the gold and everything, and where there were some very good prospects. So he and this chap went into Anchorage then and bought an outfit and a boat and an even rude motor and started up those rivers somewhere off of Cook Inlet. In the first place, he said they almost got drowned because they didn't know about the tides.
Yes.
And they were stranded, and they said all of a sudden this big rush of water came, and he said they were just lucky to be saved from it. But anyway, so they went up the rivers, and course, never found anything, but had a wonderful trip. Dick said on that trip, the first one in the country, they saw bears, they saw moose, they saw caribou, just had a marvelous time out of
it. Do you recall what year that might have been?
In 1915. Yes, mm-hmm. That's when he came in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that was before Anchorage. Or
well, it was just as I say, just being surveyed. Yeah. That's really what it was, yeah. Just being surveyed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Then I was wondering, you said that in Bethel he would get the Denver Post.
Yes, and that's why he took the Denver.
And that's why he...
Yeah, took the Denver Post, yeah. You see.
He'd become acquainted in, yes, he lived in Colorado.
Yeah, lived in Colorado and loved it, Yeah. I remember when we were first married, we were always going, the ice pool was just a few $100 when we lived in Enana, really a local thing. So we always said, well, we'll take a trip to Colorado and we'll pick us out a site we're going to live, but we never did get back to Colorado.
Did you ever come close to winning the ice pool?
No.
Do you still get tickets on it every year?
I haven't. The last two. I don't know. I sort of forgot about it until it was too late. And my family do. They still take it, take them,
It's illegal to send those tickets
through the mail. Oh, yes. You can't send. You have to do is send somebody here and let them put your name on their tickets because you can't.
Eva McGowan was a pretty good one about reminding people.
I know she was.
Now that she's gone.
Well, yes.
Do you recall the first time you met Eva?
Yes, I belonged to the Episcopal Church at that time. I had been raised Episcopal, and I came up here and I started going to the Episcopal Church. And she belonged to the Guild, and that's when I first met her. And she really is always, it was just a, person that she...
She's very active in the church.
Oh, yes. And, just one of those people that you thoroughly enjoyed her.
Our memories of her are all so good,
Everybody.
Though we hated to see her go the way she did, but actually she was getting quite frail.
Well,
and didn't want people to...
I was surprised at what Lydia von Hansen said. She said that as tragic as it was, somehow, as she thought it over, maybe it was to be, and maybe that was the way, because she said Eva was without funds. She had used up all her money that she had gotten from her property. And I said, well, surely Eva or Lydia the bank wouldn't, after all, Ed Stroker known her all his life. She said, yes, but Eva was very proud. And she said people were very nice about taking her out to meals and doing things like that for her. And I guess she had, they said she'd gotten very frail.
Yes, she had. Uh-huh. She'd had a couple of bad falls.
Yes. And she was so proud,
Yes, she was.
So proud.
Indeed. Mm-hmm.
There'll never be another Eva McGowan, that's all.
No. The first night I was in Fairbanks, I slept on her couch there in the Nordale lobby because I couldn't find a hotel.
Uh-huh.
It was in October of 1949.
Uh-huh.
There was just no hotel room to be had in town, so I just sacked out on the couch and covered myself up with my coat rather than sit up all night. Mm-hmm. The only other place to go was at some of the all-night bars,
yes.
I wasn't interested in that at all.
Did you just come to Alaska because you just wanted to?
Yeah.
Just wanted to see it.
I'd always wanted to come to
Alaska. I think that's wonderful. Well, that's one of my...
First place I went to apply for a job, they hired me, which was the...
Which I imagine was a surprise, wasn't it?
Well, it was to me, yes.
Yes, my daughter-in-law came up to go to the college, but she needed a job too, so she had studied architecture at Carnegie Tech, so she'd had 2 years. So she wanted to come up here. And it was only through Annabeth Hanlon that her family were allowed her to come. Annabeth came back, and Susan's old sister, whom she calls Mom because she raised her, had a mutual friend with
Annabeth.
And Annabeth showed her slides. So they were convinced that it wasn't the wild and woolly country that they all pictured her, there was nothing up here. So Sue came, and then she went to work at Ladd, and Eva, she met Eva. She always, enjoyed Eva, and she just wanted to come, that was all.
Mm-hmm.
My son at the University of Alaska, he too went out there, and that's where they met.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Do you have brothers or sisters?
No. They're dead. I had a brother and a sister, but I'm the last one in my family. I'm the end of my family.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But you have two sons and how many grandchildren?
10.
10.
Mm-hmm. 10 grandchildren.
Dixie's middle name, Barbie, was that a family name?
Yes, it was. It, I think he told me the original Barbie was a minister of the church where their family had attended.
He was active in several organizations.
Yes, he was. He was very active. American Legion Auxiliary, Elks. He was at the Lions Club for a number of years. Mm-hmm.
Well, then he served in World War One.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
Did he? Where did he serve?
He didn't get overseas. He and another chap enlisted from up here and went out. And Dix was very underweight. He was always very thin, and they didn't want him to. But he just kept pestering until they finally said, "Well, they'd take him anyway, you know." And he was all set to go. He joined the motor transport car because you know how they had these big, you wouldn't remember, but I remember the big posters, join the motor transport car and haul the boys into Berlin. Well, that's what he thought, you know. But then the war ended before he and they ever got overseas. So then he came. He wasn't coming back to Alaska. In fact, his commanding officer wanted him to stay out and stay in the Army. And he thought that for a long time, and he said, one day he was in Seattle, and here was an ad of one of the boats sailing for Alaska. So he said right then he knew he wanted to come back to Alaska.
Well, he loved it.
He did. You
could tell that in his life.
He did.
He was always a jolly...
he was.
He was a jolly person to, yes, to meet
was.
On the street.
Yes, he was. He was a very nice person to live with. And I, you know, we'd been married 45 years when he passed away. So it's
what are your plans now? To Sacramento?
I will return to Sacramento. I'll go back this winter and live in hopes that someday I'll land back in Fairbanks again for good, you know. But I appreciate being able to come, you know, in the summertime for a little bit and see my friend. Mm-hmm. And I love the pioneer doings because you meet all these people, you know.
I do too. Though I'm just a 24-year resident.
That's
all
right.
I'm really a Chichaco, but it's just...
You're really not.
I enjoy the Pioneer Organization so much. And
but you've taken a nice part in the community and the life up here and made yourself a part of it, Mike, and I think that's wonderful. And
that's part of living, I think.
Yeah, Alaska needs, and I think it's up to the younger people to carry on, you know, because after all, it's going to be a, you know, it'll develop and be a wonderful place to live.
I enjoyed the Regent's reception this year, and then the mug-up, of course, when so many people, you know, like you come back in the summer.
Yes, I know.
Then you'll bump into someone who hasn't been back for several years.
Oh, I know it.
It's, I just like to sit and watch.
Yeah. Well, there's such a, I was going to say, it does make a difference how short a time people live up here, and you meet them, and I was in the hospital in January, and one day a new nurse came into my room, and so of course she introduced herself and she asked me, you know, where I was from. I said Fairbanks. Oh, Fairbanks. Oh, my husband was up there at Ladfield in World War II, and my daughter was born up there. And right away, you know, there was that bond, and it does things to you, you know. And so we became really very good friends, and Sue gathered up a lot of Alaska magazines, and she hadn't seen any for a long time, and she said she wanted to come back. So I said, well, Fairbanks had changed, but not to wait too long, because it was growing. And I do marvel at the growth of Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. I really do, Mike. I don't, all this building, something, you know, somebody must have the means to do all that. Less
well,
of speculation,
love. No, it's Fairbanks is a service center. It's a transportation
well,
hub.
Well, that's
and it's
true,
a service
too,
center
and it does. Uh-huh.
For goods and mail and transportation
right.
for all of northern and interior Alaska. Uh-huh. So.
And I know when we lived at Beth, we see everything came out of Fairbanks. I think now it has been changed to Anchorage, and the airplanes always flew out of here for Bethel.
Well, Anchorage has become the largest city because of its accessibility.
I
think the transpolar flights are the one. Well, first it was the oil
discovery
right,
too,
in that area.
Down
then
in that area.
They worked, the people in Anchorage worked very aggressively for this transpolar flight business.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, most of them have to stop in fuel. And they have hundreds of airplanes that go through there every month
something?
Now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In last fall, Japan Airlines alone had over 60 a week.
Oh,
a week.
No.
And someone recently told me that they have about 125 flight crews there. Or this was in the spring. They had about 125 flight crews that go from Tokyo to Anchorage and have to overnight.
Yes.
Their flight time is up. And the same from Europe. They have many flight crew changes.
Five.
That's a
Medicine.
Terrific impact.
Well,
on
it
the community
surely
time.
Is,
they really
yes.
Figured out the economics of it. And they have had a lot of aggressive, newer Alaskans
I think so.
There.
Uh-huh.
Where Fairbanks, because of our location in Fairbanks, we have a higher cost in fuel.
That's right.
But we're proud that we have the Pan American flight.
I'll say.
And hopefully
I hope
we'll
it
have
never
others.
Discontinues a mm-hmm. flight.
But that's, I think that's one of the basic reasons for Fairbanks' growth.
Yes.
You notice a lot of out-of-town growth, too, since
oh,
the flood.
Oh, so
a lot of people
much.
Have moved up
well, that's what I thought we were out. You know, you were away one mm-hmm. night. Marge Hagelin came and called and took me out for a ride. And it's really, it's just amazing to me, the homes that you, all mm-hmm. on those hills and so far up. But I do, I'm like you, I think after the flood, people decided.
The flood moved a lot of people
up
higher.
You bet it did. You bet. Yes, I had regretted not owning a home, that we didn't buy a home before Dix died, after we sold our place on 10th and Cushman. But then I thought after the flood, I would have been faced with the same as everybody
yeah.
else, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it was just as well yeah. that I didn't have a place.
It was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm, it was a bad deal.
The Queen Regent this year is Lena, you know, Lena Phipps, you probably met
her. Yes, yes.
That's
uh-huh.
where I first got to know her, uh-huh. was during the flood. She and her husband
oh.
were flood refugees in my uh-huh. house.
Well.
But her sister, Lila, I had met her at Barrow.
Oh.
I know.